3, 2, 1. Hi, I'm Joe Tate, and I have a podcast. It's called Over the Timeline. I look back at the highlights and a few lowlights of my sports broadcast career. Over the Timeline, brought to you by the Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
It's Over the Timeline with Joe Tate. I'm Bruce Van Dyke. It's brought to you by Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake. Joe, how are you doing today?
I'm ready for another trip back in time.
All right, okay. Speaking of time, and that kind of leads into this, I remember the old, was it Miller Lite? Is it, you've got the time, we've got the beer. Remember that, right? I think for the Indians at that time, we were going to be talking about something that if you got the dime.
What a lead-in.
We've got the beer. This is the 10-cent beer night. We're going to have a chance to talk about this. We're looking back on June 4th of 1974. And at that time, how long have you were calling Indians games on the radio at this
yes.
time?
Yeah, with Herb Score.
Was this tied in? You were doing Cavaliers at the time, too?
I was doing both. In fact, I was doing all three. I was doing hockey and basketball and baseball because they were all on the same station and all owned by the same guy, Nick Belletti.
And they said, Joe, can you do it? And you said, sure, I can do it. And
anything to make a buck.
So this was like all season, all year round pretty much, right?
I had 9 off days in 1974.
You remember what you did on any of those off days other than sleep, I suppose?
I did whatever my wife told me to do.
Okay. But this was June 4th, 1974. This was at Cleveland Municipal Stadium.
Yep.
And as many times during the years, baseball, great for promotions. And this promotion was a 10-cent beer night. I guess beer at that time, I looked it up, was regularly 65 cents at that particular time. So you're even looking, thinking, that seems like a bargain considering how things are. But this was from 1974, 65 cents for a beer. And I guess the prerequisite was you could have like a limit 6 per purchase or something to that effect. I guess it's kind of blurry, not like the many of the fans that night, of what the rules were for something like this. Were you aware of this promotion at the time?
Oh, yeah. Sure, we talked about it before it happened. And, you know, it was supposed to be controlled, and there was no control. And a goodly number of the folks that showed up, they didn't know whether the baseball was round or square. They were down there to drink beer and raise cane, and they did plenty of both.
Well, there's a lot of a backstory to this, but 1974, who's on the Indians? Was it like, was this Charlie Spikes? Was this in the middle? They were not a very good team at that time, right?
No, they were not. The highlight of that 74 season was Dick Bosman's no-hitter, and it was a club that was, you know, struggling, not only on the field, but also at the gate. So it was time to look for promotions that would bring new fans into the ballpark. And what it brought was a tidal wave of idiots.
And here's a little, just as too much alcohol and Billy Martin on the opposing team, who's fiery as well, the Texas Rangers, just a brief little bit of a highlight from Joe as he was describing things, which was your job as the on the radio.
Now there's another group of morons running around in the outfield.
They got morons, you said. Whoops. Oh, I'm having an audio typical. That one we require stupidity, I believe, was the words here. And then you have.
Now it's a full-scale riot. There has to be 200 people.
Now, that's later in the game. I understand prior to that, and again, you're taking on the Texas Rangers, and the Indians were mounting a comeback, so there was something good happening on the field. But I think from what I've seen from reports and comments on this, there was a sprinkling of shenanigans happening even from the very beginning, right?
Right from the start of the game, we had streakers. And that was back when streaking was popular, right. And people were running naked across the outfield. And it started with maybe 2 or 3, then it became 5 or 6, then it became, and they were doing it during the pause between innings, right, for the most part. And, you know, the ushers down there who were supposed to keep things in order, they were all men who were in their retirement years, and they couldn't catch naked teenagers dashing across the outfield. So the scene was set for disaster.
And it was also set up, I guess, from something that happened either a week or a couple of weeks before. There was a brawl in Texas with the Indians?
Yes. Yeah, well, it was a situation where the Wilcox, the Indians pitcher, picked up a ground ball between first and home, and Lenny Randle, the base runner for the Rangers, knocked him over getting to first base. And we had a fellow named John Ellis. I loved John. John played the game the old-fashioned way, and he returned the favor. He knocked Lenny Randle out. I mean, physically KO'd him for doing what he did to Wilcox. And Billy Martin was ready for war, and the whole scene was set with Beer Night as a backdrop.
Well, you get fans who come in, and from what I understand, those on a budget, it was a 50-cent bleacher seat, and then you could get, for 60 cents, you could get six beers and perhaps stand in multiple lines. As you mentioned, a lot of people came to the ballpark already having celebrated or whatever, getting themselves there. So they were in for their own little party taking place. At what time during the game did you sort of feel something turn, if at all? Do you remember?
You know, it was just a slow digression. There weren't a whole lot of baseball fans there, and you could see people who were actually there for the ball game start to gather up their families and friends and leave at about the sixth inning, because it was apparent things were going to really, because we had some fights breaking out in the stands, and so they were retreating. And then most of the folks from the front office of the Indians also retreated in about the sixth or seventh inning. In fact, I remember making comment at the time that all the front office people were bailing out before the end of the ball game, and they didn't want to be around at the end either. So the whole thing was just a preview of coming distractions.
Yeah, here's a little bit of audio we have that was done the following morning. You mentioned the flagship was 3WE, WWE, and their morning man was Larry Morrow. And he got you on the phone that morning to kind of talk to you, because this was becoming major news. Networks were covering this as well. And here's a little bit of that conversation that you had with Larry Morrow the morning after the 10-cent beer night. This is the morning of June 5th, 1974.
All right, it's 20 minutes right now before 8 o'clock on 3WE. Steve Albert this morning on one of his on his 640 broadcast said maybe it's time to start putting moats around baseball parks the way they do in the soccer stadiums in South America. Last night as I was listening to the game, somewhere right around between the 6th and 7th inning, I heard Joe Tate say, "Gee whiz, those dummies, those idiots, get off of the field," and I couldn't understand what was really going on. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
How are you, Larry?
Well, gee whiz, I'm not very good this morning. I'm sitting here with a black eye, as all of us here in Cleveland are doing. And I just want you to kind of relate the story to all of us, because I don't know if it's being distorted in the papers or not, but it's in the headlines this morning. The Plain Dealer, I'm sure you've seen it, says Stadium Beer Night, fans riot, ending Indians rally to forfeit, and things like that. Can you tell us about it, Joe?
Well, certainly everything that's in the paper is true. I see no distortions here at all, and I've sat and read the whole thing this morning. They pretty well describe what was going on. In fact, I don't think it's possible really to put the full scope of what happened down there last night into print or into the spoken word. It just defied description. I sat there last night and watched that happen, and I really, for a while, I couldn't believe my eyes, and I still am in a state of some shock as to what we witnessed down there last night. And I don't know, if it comes to the point where you have to start putting moats around ballparks, that's, I think, the time to cash in your chips and go do something else.
You know, Joe, let's face it, there were 25,000 plus people down there last night, and a couple of hundred people started running on the field. Obviously, they were feeling some of that beer. And they just started causing some problems, enjoying themselves. And the sad part for all of us that were trying to listen to the game, and even those that were there, was probably could have been one of the greatest victories that we've had this year for the Indians. And then the whole thing was messed up in the ninth inning. And Billy Martin was quoted as saying, complete idiots, jerks, and if it wasn't for the Cleveland players, we could have been killed out there. Was it really that serious, Joe?
Yes, very definitely so. In fact, I think that the scene, the picture that sticks in my mind most of all is the fact that in the ninth inning, you looked out on the field and you saw Texas and Cleveland ball players standing back-to-back fighting off fans with bats or fists, and they were up against people that had knives and chairs and bottles, and it was a Class A war out there for a period of time. And I have to go along with Billy Martin. In fact, I had said on the air before the whole riot broke out, I thought the game should have been stopped, should have just, you know, they should have gone home. If I'd been an umpire, I never would have let it gone that far, although I admire Nestor Shylock and his crew for being as patient and as lenient and trying everything possible to get the ball game in. They showed fantastic patience, but I don't think that my patience would have been quite that great.
It's you talking, Joe, talking with Larry Morrow on 3WE the morning after 10-cent beer night. You mentioned Nestor Shylock. He ended up getting hit or injured at some point, it seemed.
Nestor Shylock. Herb Scorer and I talked to Nestor about 2 weeks later when we were out on the West Coast in Oakland, and we went down into the umpire's room and talked to Nestor about that, and he said that he was going to wait, if at all possible, for the game to conclude. The Indians were down 5-0, tied the game 5-5, had the bases loaded, nobody out. That's the situation when the riot broke out. And he said, I stood there until I felt something hit the heel of my shoe, and I turned around, and there was a hunting knife sticking in the ground right behind my shoe. And he said, that's when I said, that's it, game forfeit, let's get out of here. And the umpires left the field, game was forfeited. I mean, that shows you just how bad it really got, because it was insanity down there.
More with Joe Tate and 10-cent beer night after this.
He was a voice heard by Cleveland Cavalier and Cleveland Indians fans for decades.
There's a long drive to left field!
Until illness struck.
I've been at LifeCare twice. Both times, they helped me fight my way back home. It wasn't easy, but I came back.
Meet Joe Tate.
LifeCare helped get me back on my feet.
Real people, real heroes. LifeCare Centers of America.
With locations in Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
It's Over the Timeline with Joe Tate. I'm Bruce Van Dyke. Let's talk more about what happened during 10-cent beer night. There was some talk, and there was other reports, you know, in radio, and Pete Franklin was on the air, and there's always that sort of rivalry in baseball that there was something as a, I don't want to say a repayment from that other brawl or something. I mean, there's sort of that friendly rivalry that occurs, but some people were either taking it too hard, or there's just a lot of angry drunk people out there, I guess.
Well, what really set it off was Jeff Burrows, the right fielder for the Rangers, in the ninth inning. And if you remember the old stadium, that field was crowned to the point where if you were in the third base dugout, you couldn't really see the bottom half of your right fielder. He was like over the hill out there at right. And the fans came out on the field and somebody grabbed Jeff Burrows' hat and he turned to try and get it back. And then he was surrounded by people out there. And that's when Billy Martin grabbed a fungo bat and said, let's go get Jeff. And the whole Texas team went pouring out into right field. When they got out there, they got to feel like Custer at the Little Bighorn. Where did all those Indians show up? And I don't mean Cleveland Indians, because they were surrounded. And Kenny Espromonte then in turn led the Indians out to right field to rescue the Texas Rangers. And then they fought back-to-back all the way into the Indians' first base dugout and up the runway into the clubhouse. And, I mean, they fought their way back up there.
Now, I had heard Tim Alcorn, who's had these stories, probably conversations with you before, mentioned that you had said at one point the Cleveland police are listening to this on the radio, or other law enforcement are hearing this sort of described, which you and Herb are doing, and realizing we need to get there.
That's exactly what happened. They came down, and I had several officers telling me that they were on patrol elsewhere in the city listening to the ball game. And when they heard my description, why, they called in to their various headquarters and said, you better get people down to the stadium because there's a riot going on. And that's how they got the cops down there in sufficient numbers to finally quell the mob.
Right. 1974, no one's going to have a cell phone. No one's going to have a portable phone. It's up in 911. I don't think it even existed at that particular time. So the way the authorities would know is either somebody in a booth where you are making a decision or being able to come down. Here's a little bit more of your conversation with Larry Morrow from 3WE about describing that incident that occurred at 10 Cent Beer Night on June 4th, 1974.
You know, listening to you last night, Joe, trying to describe what was really going on at the stadium was amazing to me, and we sat with the ears just glued to the radio, hanging on every word that you were saying. And then when Nestor Shylock was hit with that chair, and then I guess Hilgendorf was also hit over the head with something. I can't remember what you
said. A chair. You got hit on the head with a chair.
Hit with a chair, too. It sounded to me as if not a riot was going on, but I just couldn't believe what you were talking about last night.
Well, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And you sit there, and I think the saddest thing of all is the Cleveland baseball fortunes have been down for a long, long time, and the attendance has slumped badly, as you well know, over the years. And here in the season when we really were starting to put a product on the field that people could come down to see and could anticipate victory, at least we had a shot at a win every time we'd go out there, this has to come along. And, when you're sitting at home or if you've got your family down there, you really wonder how long it's going to be before you come down again. And it's one of those things that I don't anticipate that it'll happen tonight. In fact, I think the saddest part of it all, Larry, is they have a 10-cent beer night, and every idiot in the world comes stumbling down to the ballpark last night. And according to some of the police that I talked to, they were about 20,000 feet off the ground when I got there.
Mm-hmm.
And they have 25,000 people show up for something like that. Now, tonight we're going to have the strikeout cancer night, which, of course, as we all know, is obviously a wonderful cause. And I'll wager you'll be able to count the people down there on the fingers of your hands. It'll be a very small crowd. When, if people really had their heads screwed on straight, it should have been the other way around.
Yeah.
Talking you with Larry Morrow back in 1974, Joe Tate, who was there with Herb Score. Who's doing baseball? Were you changing play-by-play, description, color? How was that work?
I did innings 1 through 3. Herbie did 4, 5, and 6, and then I did 7, 8, and 9.
Okay. And when you're doing a sporting event, you're telling people what's happening. You're displaying, that's what you do, and that's what you're good at. You describe that. When did you switch modes, or at least the thinking, sometimes you ignore things that are going on, you focus on it, that you're starting to describe this, and what was Herb's response when this was happening? He seems always like a low-key kind of guy. How did this affect what he was doing?
Herb did say he was terrible, and he chimed in as well that he was shocked. I think Herb, Herb has a great baseball background, and I think he had a difficult time just processing what we were watching. And I was on the air doing the play-by-play at the time, so it was just, something that I led right into. Later on, Ted Bondo wanted to fire me because I had said riot and so on. I said some other things that he felt were detrimental to the Indians. And fortunately, the team at the time was owned by Nick Mulledy, and Nick came back, talked to people, listened to the tapes and all, and exonerated me for that particular evening.
You look at the pictures that were in the newspaper that following day or from that. I don't know. Riot seems to be sort of a part of it. You have people with sticks, things that there's blood, there's, people trying to escape harm. I don't know what else you would use to describe something like that.
Bruce, it was the worst night of my 60 years of broadcasting. Without doubt, the absolute worst.
Here's how you kind of said it, and you can feel this in your voice when you talked with Larry the following morning bothered, and Larry mentions that this is like the lead story. You know, you had in network news, that was the big, you know, I'm sure you had the three networks. This is their lead story for that.
It was a headline news last night on the networks, on all three networks. They were talking, that was their very first story last night. And I don't know how we're going to turn the whole thing around. Maybe we can start tonight, hopefully.
Well, the thing of it is, Larry, what you saw down there last night is the evidence of things that are happening way beyond the ballpark. And I think there isn't one of us who sits and hears about this or reads about this that can't take some of the blame, because this is merely a manifestation of some of the very, very serious problems of our time. And, of course, it behooves us all to do a little soul searching this morning so that it doesn't break out in a supermarket or a drive-in theater or a rock concert or a ball game. It's, as I say, it was a manifestation of something that's a lot more serious than just over-imbibing fans at a ball game.
Joe, last night, before you left the stadium, had you found out if anyone was really seriously hurt, any of the players?
No, I'll be perfectly honest. They were lobbing stuff up at our booth last night, and so we just stuck it out up there until one of the policemen came up to get us and said that things had quieted down well enough for us to go home. So, I just stayed up there and waited it out. So I just went right to my car and came home. And really, it was just the way I felt last night at the when that thing was over. I just wanted to get out of there and get away from it. And it's really sad when you work 15, 16, 17 years to get someplace and to become part of something that you've always dreamed about becoming a part of, and then you get there and something like this happens, it's a real slap in the face and a real shock, and I'm still very much affected by it today. And I don't know, I just don't really know what to say, Larry.
You remember much about that ride home? I mean, you get some time to contemplate. You're just thinking, what just happened? And
yeah, I was just... Well, you could tell from the way my voice sounded, I was just stunned, the whole thing. It really took some time. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about the 74 team. It was a team that had Gaylord Perry win the Cy Young. His brother was on the club. Jim was on the club. And it was a team that actually on Labor Day was something like four games out of first place. Then Frank Robinson showed up, and that created another hole. The situation that, is probably good for another podcast someday.
Right.
But it was a roller coaster ride.
What do you remember, if at all, anything, baseball, it's like you're like the one game, as they say, what happened, forget about it, move on to the next game. You got to come back, call another game, and kind of just sort of start fresh. How do you kind of reset yourself for something like that?
I don't remember the next broadcast, but I know Herb and I probably talked about it before we went on the air. And, in a situation like that, Herb would be a great guy to be in the booth with, because he was, I wouldn't say stoic, but he was solid. He was, reserved, and... I was the one that was more of the firebrand that
right.
particular.
You had the
night.
More exclamations, I would assume,
yeah.
or some, that type of.
But it was good to have Herbie around just to talk to, because he was a very solid individual.
It was on June 4th, 1974. It goes down in Cleveland Indians history, baseball history as well. Strange thing is, still, I have to believe that they went ahead and did another one on July 18th. A little bit more understanding of it, and it's just the culmination on that particular night. Is what day of the week, by the way, was that? Do you remember? It was a weeknight, obviously.
It was during the week. I don't remember what night. But, they came back and did another one, but fewer beers, more money, better control, police in attendance, and it went off without incident.
Without a hitch. But there you have a little bit of the history of the 10-cent beer night. Joe Tate was there. Apparently also looking, they were throwing firecrackers. I saw that, heard that. And then eventually at some point people were stealing the bases. Someone Took advantage of that with some baseball memorabilia.
Well, apparently. Tommy Hilgendorf, the Indians relief pitcher, got his head split open when somebody threw a chair out of the upper deck that nailed him. They threw it into a crowd, and Tom unfortunately had his head in the way at the time.
Wow. Well, we thought we'd look back on one of those days, not a highlight, but a low light, I guess, in sports as well. But as a broadcaster, you just do your job and understand that you're there to provide descriptions to people, and these apparently were the descriptions you needed to bring that night.
I'm glad that that is behind me, because that was the worst in 60 years of broadcasting. That was the worst.
It's been Over the Timeline with Joe Tate. I'm Bruce Van Dyke. It's been brought to you by Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake.